Welcome to The Good Stuff with the Sonoma County Wine Growers. I'm Virginie Boone alongside Carissa Cruz, President and CEO of The Wine Growers. We're here to talk about what makes Sonoma County such a special place to grow, make, and enjoy wine.
I know.
Are you enjoying wine?
Always. Are you?
Of course.
Of course I am. That's one of my favorite things.
Yes. But what else is going on with the Sonoma County Wine Growers?
You know, it's been interesting. It's always interesting when you have short weeks coming off of the Memorial weekend holiday, because it's like every day I'm off a day. And then all of a sudden it was like, thankfully, Friday and then Saturday. Woohoo! So, you got to love that. The one thing I think, again, those holiday weeks, we're still kind of coming from the aftermath, the glow. I shouldn't say aftermath because that sounds negative. Glow, the bright glow of the Healdsburg Wine and Food Experience event, which was in town a couple of weeks ago, which was just awesome. I mean, I say I get to go to a lot of big wine events, and I know I'm biased because it was ours and it was here, but it was pretty awesome.
It's a great event.
And people were having a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And the big bottle party went very, very late, and people were just hanging out, and that was fun too.
Big bottles are involved.
I know.
I think it takes time for people to drink them.
I know. And it was just, I mean, I think it was great for the growers. It was great for the winemakers and vintners, our chefs, and just to see so many people enjoying food and wine, young people, older people, people all ages, which is great. I mean, there's been so much news lately around, what is the status of wine and the wine industry and wine community, and who are the future drinkers or current drinkers even. And I think when you go to those kind of large grand tasting events and you just see the diversity of people enjoying wine, it kind of renews your hope and faith in what we're all doing out there and the story we're telling and the narrative we're crafting. So I was pretty happy to see that most of all.
Absolutely. And just to see, these world-renowned chefs walking around Healdsburg, just kind of like,
chilling,
taking it all in and enjoying the wine as well.
Yes.
And enjoying, hopefully, some of the vineyard tours that they went on.
100%. It was super fun. I mean, I think that, we did the big barbecue out at Dutton Ranch and the vineyard immersion experiences. And just people were so excited. I mean, some folks came because they love Chef Matt Horn, who was literally, he brought, since we had him on the show, he brought Lucille. Not the twins of his big barbecue. So that was exciting to find out what barbecue he was going to show up with. People were coming for his barbecue or just coming to be out at a ranch and a place they normally don't get access to meet a bunch of winemakers and growers and go out in their trucks and get to experience what they do. Was pretty amazing. So that was fun. Yeah. And the chefs just hanging out. I ended up in a picture with a few chefs and I didn't even realize how big of a deal they were until later on.
So you're just like, I have a second.
I was like, yeah, I've got a glass of wine, smile. And next thing you know, I'm like looking at the photos later on. I'm like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They're kind of a big deal, which is awesome. So to your point, just wandering around Healdsburg and all the events, it was pretty awesome.
And loving Sonoma County and everything that
it
brings for chefs. I mean, the chefs that we've had on this show will, say that all day long, like how much they just love all the things that grow here naturally. So.
Yeah, and we had the editor of Food and Wine in. He wasn't able to make it last year. He was here the year before, Hunter Lewis, who has a very sweet spot for Sonoma County and had lived in Sebastopol at one point. And so he was super excited to be back. And we started a new trade program this year, which was really great too. Just bringing trade members together to talk about the challenges of the industry and where we see big opportunities. So.
Yeah, and I heard a lot of great things about that, and I wasn't able to actually make that specific seminar, but quick takeaway?
Yeah, I mean, that was actually one of my favorite things. I think one of the biggest takeaways is just how we need more collaboration.
Absolutely.
And how important it is to really all be saying positive things about what we do. I mean, we get the chance to craft the narrative and hopefully working with some of our media friends to help create maybe more positive headlines out there, because I think what we're doing in our farming and in our winemaking and in our food here in Sonoma County and literally around the world in this community, wine community, is pretty awesome. And our growers and our vintners are stewards. So I think to be able to tell those positive stories, which is exactly what we're doing on The Good Stuff.
Exactly what we're doing.
Most importantly, we get to do that too.
And there's no shortage,
as
we've found, right? We can talk to somebody once a week on this program. We can write a story once a week. And there's no...
And the ideas keep coming in.
The ideas keep coming in. So many good stories.
So many good stories. And we have a great guest today.
Yes, we do. But should we wait?
Okay, well, we'll do the suspense.
Okay.
Well, let's not wait. Let's just introduce her. So today on our show, we have Anna Keller joining us, famously from Petaluma Gap AVA. So we get to talk all things about Keller State, Anna Keller and her family business, and also the Petaluma Gap AVA, which is a really great and important part of the Sonoma County landscape.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm looking forward to our conversation when we come back on The Good Stuff. Welcome back to The Good Stuff. I'm Virginie Boone here with Carissa Cruz and our guest today, Anna Keller of Keller Estate. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here with my favorite Sonoma ladies.
Oh, well, I'll take that.
Well, that's the good stuff.
That is the good stuff.
We're starting off strong.
Now we can just talk about, you know, who knows what. But look, I mean, I've long loved the Keller Estate story. As you know, we've had many conversations in the past. And, you know, one of the things I love about it is father-daughter.
Yeah.
And also that any second generation, any multi-generation, we do a lot of those types of stories here. And there's so much a part of Sonoma County history and past, present. So tell us a little, give us a little bit of kind of the back story of how Keller Estate started.
So I studied biochemistry because I love plants. That's why I brought you plants today.
I know. I'm very excited.
But that's another story. So when my dad He came to Sonoma County. He decided he wanted to build his life here. We were born and raised in Mexico City, and he decided that where he wanted to spend the rest of his life was Sonoma County. They bought this beautiful property in Sonoma where it used to be a dairy. By that, when we bought the property, there was nothing except cows. He's now planted 90 acres of vineyards, 36 acres of olive groves, and about 4,000 additional trees. So we've really changed the landscape of where we are and created a multi-agricultural haven. So that was his life work, and I joined him sort of a little bit early mid-row, you know, on having the biochemistry background when he got a little bit interested in wine and asked Rombauer to ferment that first ton of grapes and then discovered you can have a stuck fermentation. It seemed like the best opportunity to call on me and bring me into the fold. And, you know, it's always interesting when you talk about family working together. There's always, you know, there's always going to be somebody who the hierarchy is always strong and intense. And that's been the story. And for many years, I worked with my dad. And one of the things he would always say is we discuss things. And once we come to an agreement, we all stick together and we move forward as a team. And I think that was one of the strongest things. And, you know, now I'm faced with a different situation. But it's definitely after that story, I started working in the vineyard, started working making the wine. Selling the wine has been one of my passions. And one of the side things that became really interesting for me was to work on the Petaluma Gap AVA.
Yeah, absolutely. Very instrumental.
I want to know, though, what were you planning to do if there wasn't a stuck fermentation?
Drink 60 cases of Chardonnay?
Fair enough. It's always very important to grow and make wine that you yourself like.
Actually, I love Chardonnay.
Yeah,
so
I do too.
It's my Friday wine. It's my Friday after work
wine. It's my many day a week wine.
I consider it comfort wine.
Yes,
absolutely. It's the equivalent of comfort food.
It's your chicken noodle soup.
It's your everything
in the fall. Yes. Yeah.
So I guess I don't think they really had a plan back there. That's where I came in. It was, what do we do now? We had 13 acres of vineyard planted. It was going to start producing. Yeah. Rombauer was buying our fruit, and it was all great. And as many larger wineries, they had already started planting vineyards, which came into production. And then we found ourselves with 13 acres of producing Chardonnay grapes, and that's where Keller State started.
Did you grow up drinking wine? Was that something at the table?
It was something at the table. Yeah. I think in Mexico, it's something that's very common at the table. But it was mostly, you know, Spanish red and white French. And that would sort of...
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I've only been to Mexico City once, so I don't know. And I think it's...
Well, the Mexico City where I grew up and the Mexico City of today are two completely different things.
I pretty much assumed that because, I think it's had a whole renaissance of sorts with food and wine, for sure.
I know. I think that's most... We've been having a lot of fun at the winery, kind of digging into our heritage and doing fun events around it. We've got a series called the... It's a culinary tour of Mexico.
I love it.
This year, we're featuring on the tortilla. And so yeah. we teach people how to make tortillas, hence the corn.
You could have used that extra corn we had last summer.
I could have used your extra corn.
All right, and plant corn
but
again.
But the really fun part has been learning how to pair food and Mexican wine, Mexican food and wine, because it's always not, it's not a straight shooter. You've got to tweak the food a little bit. And so I think that's a great way to harmonize all the spicy flavors, all of the acidity and the vibrancy of Mexican food with wine.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's so fun. We've been doing a lot more of those kind of exercises and conversations, even when we bring in sommeliers and others. It's like, let's take very unusual food. Like, we kind of know the basics. So how do we really get creative and showcase that wine can actually complement so many different styles of food? So I love that you're doing that. So it's a throwback to your heritage and also very useful information.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Well, and if my memory serves, your dad was in the auto industry, correct?
Yes.
And so what was it about Sonoma County that he fell in love with first? I mean, was he just trying to have something rural? Was he trying to get into agriculture, or he just loved everything about here?
I think he loved everything about here, but it was definitely the roads. So the beautiful windy roads of Sonoma are something that he really enjoyed. It's just beautiful scenery, and they're great to take a drive.
Okay, I did not expect you to say that, but it makes 100% sense.
We don't have street roads. We have beautiful windy roads that old cars enjoy.
Okay. As you do at Keller Estate as well.
Exactly.
I was going to say.
Right, so the car collection is significant.
Quite phenomenal.
And I'm still just intrigued. Like, how do you go from...
Mexico City?
Yeah, just deciding that you want to be here to... actually having a vineyard, and you've explained some of that, but your role, you're the youngest of four kids. My understanding is you were always tapped to be the one that would take over the winery.
Yes. So I was the one who loved plants. I started working with him. I worked for 25 years with him. I worked in the vineyard, worked with the winemaker, worked on sales. And so I really developed in Keller Estate. I started Keller Estate. So I always say he planted the vineyard mm-hmm. and I started Keller Estate.
Oh, that's pretty awesome.
It is awesome. And remind me what year that was.
We planted our first vineyard in 1989.
Okay.
And Keller Estate started making wine in 2000.
All right. And I remember those early days. I mean, you still remain one of the few wineries that people can come visit in Petaluma Gap.
Yes. For many years, I always joke we used to always win best white wine of Petaluma. And that's why the other vineyard only had red wine. So there was only two vineyards producing wine in Petaluma. So we're still probably... we're all estate, so all of the wines that you taste at Keller Estate come from our property, and that's been central to what we want to do. We want to show the passage of time through our vineyards, how we learn, how we develop, what we've learned in agricultural practices over the past 30 years. So that, for me, is the heart, and it's really special to get people to come and visit, see where the vineyards are, feel the Petaluma Gap winds, see what fermentation is going on through in the cellar or the cave, and then just sit down and taste the wines.
Mm-hmm. So talk a little bit about Petaluma Gap, because that was definitely a labor of love and a lot of time and energy to get that AVA established and recognized formally. So kind of walk through the process, because I think it's pretty fascinating for folks to even learn or understand what it takes to create an AVA status. So can you kind of take us back to the beginning and who you were working with and what was the motivation and inspiration?
Well, I think the inspiration was to get, have... first and foremost, convince the growers, then trade, media, and then the consumer that the wines that we were doing that particular region were very special. Mm-hmm. But we needed to learn and understand about the region before we could actually communicate it. So I remember the first time we decided to dig into it, we worked with Liz Hotch, and we said, let's get as many wines that... Were you at that tasting?
I was at that tasting. Yeah.
I was just remembering all of a sudden. I saw that look.
She's like, wait a minute.
Yeah, wait a minute. You were there.
Well, we were trying to see how many wines we could get that sourced a lot of fruit from Petaluma Gap. Yeah. We were trying to get at least 75%. But, when you can't read it on a label, you've got to ask the grower.
Yeah.
So we kept asking the vintners and the growers, and all of a sudden we had over 70 bottles of wine that were 100% Petaluma Gap fruit. So this is around 2010, 2011.
Okay.
And after that tasting, we kept doing an exercise and seeing what the growers wanted to do. This was a very democratic process.
Yeah.
We sat down. We all discussed the pros and cons. Sonoma Coast was something easy and recognizable that was already on the label. So a lot of people didn't feel very comfortable changing that state, including my dad. He thought, it's like, why are you rocking the boat? There's no need to do this. But we did. Yes. And so we kind of voted that we wanted to go ahead and pursue the next steps of defining the AVA. And that's when a really great team came. That Petaluma Gap Board was all volunteer, which I always think is really beautiful. And it's really special. And you had people that just vintners, and we had a great consultant, retired environmental consultant, Doug Cover, which I always get a shout out because he really did all of the processing. He took us step by step. And it's a federally granted
status recognition.
Yeah. So you go and you present your case, and the case needs to demonstrate that you have, you know, a viticultural reason, that you have a historical reason, that there's a sense of place. Mm-hmm. There's all these things that you have to bring together to the table to demonstrate that what you're saying actually has validity.
Right.
We're very lucky that Petaluma has had grape growings for, you know, before we planted in 1989, but there's records of vineyards back from, you know, the 1800s. Yep. So that wasn't a difficult
thing.
The history part was easy.
Yeah.
The pointing on a map part was easy. You had the town of Petaluma.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Then when the hard part was when we were trying to define what made it special. And after a lot of difficult conversations and looking at maps and talking with our neighbors, we talked a lot to West Sonoma Coast growers and to Russian River growers, and it really was the wind.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and I think there was, I mean, you had to keep going back and forth on some of the boundaries as these processes sometimes require. And so that, I mean, it took a long time. It was a serious labor of love for all the volunteers and, you know, people who are running their own businesses to make this actually happen.
It's the beauty of volunteers and the beauty of volunteers.
Yeah, I mean, you don't realize how much time you're putting into it.
And you're not getting paid to do it because you have a whole other job that is actually, you know, you have to balance.
People at the winery often complain they really didn't see what we were seeing or what I hoped I would be seeing. So it was definitely a labor of love and kind of very long pregnancy.
Yeah. And when did it officially get its recognition?
In 2017, December 2017.
I was going to say 18, but that was because it was so late in 17. Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a long road. But I'm curious just your experience with sales and sort of being on the road and talking to tradespeople who buy wine. You know, I mean, you must have been a very important voice in what the Petaluma Gap could mean ultimately to the consumer.
You know, it was funny. It was sort of like a 180 degree change. The first few times we talked about this, and I remember being at a symposium in Chicago, and sommeliers kept saying, like, we don't need more AVAs. Mm-hmm. The consumers don't want to hear about more AVAs. And there was a lot of pushback, and I guess that's where we were all very uneasy about that. But once it was granted and they understood, they were able to point at a map that somebody has said, I like this wine, therefore I'm going to pick up that other bottle of wine that says Petaluma Gap. Mm-hmm. I think that people got more comfortable. And I also think that in this world where we no longer have as many the gatekeepers have changed. People can look up a wine individually. Mm-hmm. They can figure out more. It really has empowered consumers to go out and research and just find what they want to be tasting. And if that Petaluma Gap is important to them, then they're going to pick up a bottle and try it.
Right.
So I want to know, the first time you saw a bottle of wine with Petaluma Gap on it, how did that feel?
Oh, it was so special. It's almost as special as the first time I saw somebody ordering my wine at a restaurant.
Oh, yeah.
They're like the two moments that really made it special.
For the short amount of time I had a partnership in a wine brand, I remember the first time I got to walk into a restaurant and I sat at the bar and like ordered it by the glass, and I was like looking around like, does everyone see what I'm drinking? Like, how cool am I? And then you realize how hard the wine business is. But that there was a very magical moment.
This is all about the good stuff.
I kept thank you for bringing it back up. But I remember I kept that receipt forever because it literally said the wine brand on the name on the receipt, and I was like this, I've arrived. So awesome.
It's a big deal.
Yeah, it's a big deal. So I totally can relate to those early moments of just something you worked so hard on and then getting to see it out in the marketplace or seeing people enjoy it, smiling and having that great experience with it.
Yeah.
And I think it's made a huge change. One of the most, you know, impactful things, seeing how it's changed the economy in the town of Petaluma has been very interesting. Mm. We went from a town that did not consider itself part of wine country.
Yeah.
There weren't any tasting rooms downtown. People didn't want to taste wines. You know, they were like, well, I'm not going to pay $40 for a bottle of Pinot Noir.
Yeah.
To being a town that really embraces it and supports it. And there's now wineries downtown and tasting rooms.
Yes.
So it's just been very interesting to see how it drove the economy of our town.
And you're the first stop.
Exactly.
As you come into, you know, Sonoma County, which is wonderful and beautiful. Yeah. I think And also having a place to keep ag and egg. I mean, we know Petaluma historically, dairies and chickens and large farms. And so to be able to maintain agriculture in a way that our farmers can still afford to keep the land and ag is so important. So I think all the work you did on creating this AVA and really breathing life into the wine community there is incredibly important, not just for Petaluma, but for Sonoma County and the North Bay.
Yeah. No, I love thinking about that impact on Petaluma. So when we come back, we're going to take a quick break. We will get a little bit more specific on some of your sustainability efforts and some of the wines that you make.
And I don't know if you saw this, but there's bubbles over
yes,
there.
Yes, I did see
okay.
that. Yeah.
Just wanted to mention that. Okay,
they
very
will be
good.
Opened. Good stuff with our guest, Anna Keller of Keller Estate. And, you know, when during the break, we started talking about monarch butterflies because you were so nice to bring us some milkweed. But you have a very substantial program at Keller Estate for monarchs. Tell us a little bit about why and how and what you do there.
So in Mexico and close to Mexico City, it's one of the biggest traditions is to go watch the monarch butterflies when they come down for their migration. And you just go on these fours and they're just all you see are the butterflies. You actually can't even see the trees. Mm. And it's very magical. Wow. And if you've seen it once, you want to continue seeing it for the rest of your life. And unfortunately, that's not the case. Their paths, their migration paths are a lot scarce, and they don't have enough food along the way. So one of the ways that we can increase their migration path is by creating a milkweed path. Mm, so if they have milk, milkweed is one of the plants in which they feed specifically. And that's because that's where they lay their eggs, and it's just kind of part of their cycle. So I just want everybody in Sonoma County to plant some milkweed so we can become a haven for monarch butterflies.
Well,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
So I wanted to start with the both of you, and
yeah.
that's why I brought some plants.
I know.
I'll bring more. Yeah.
I know. I feel like we should do a whole plant drive for the butterflies.
Yeah. We should.
Well, you know, this is part of the beneficial insects. So butterflies help with.
For sure.
And so that's part of what we're trying to do at Keller Estate, whether, you know, the bees. We work with the 4-H in Petaluma, and we have a bee training program. The monarch butterflies is part of, you know, just continuing to build. And it's amazing just to see how the butterflies attract the ladybugs and the ladybugs. And, you know, you can just really get microscopic and see everything that's happening. It's pretty cool.
We just put in a pollinator strip at our office. So to encourage all of that as well, which we know that you don't need bees to pollinate for vineyards, but still great to continue that sort of support of the ecosystem more broadly. Yeah. And
so
it's beautiful.
Has their migration path, has it changed through Sonoma County in your time here?
There's several migration paths through different parts. One is through California, through Texas. And so there's different paths, different subspecies of monarch butterflies. But it's more that they can't find food along the chain. Mm-hmm. So they fly from Mexico up to Canada and back. And so we're just part of that migration pattern.
And would you say that's attributed to just loss of agriculture in general?
Loss of agricultural spaces.
Okay. All right. Well,
we
can do something.
Another reason to support agriculture.
Another reason.
Yeah.
And so you were sharing, though, there's like one, you at least have one butterfly that likes to hang out.
Well, that's what my kid said. I kept taking pictures of it and sending it in because there's websites where you can go in and you log on the butterflies that you see, and that way they can start tracking where they are.
I love it.
So
yeah.
Where they find them. So I found mine, and everybody thinks it's just the same one because it was there every day. But I think it was just different ones.
Different ones.
Migration.
They were
thing. It was just, they're solo migrators.
Yeah. They were getting the word out. They're like, so, and the next one was coming through.
Maybe they just didn't want to migrate because Keller Estate is such
they
a great place
found
to
a home.
Be.
We've already talked to the ducks about that, and they just hang out for most of the year. So we're a good you know,
so
recreational
funny.
Center.
Word has gotten out. So tell us a little bit more about what you do in the vineyard. You've got how many acres planted?
We've got 90 acres of vineyards planted.
Okay.
Actually, 18 are under replant right now. So for the first 2 years, we let the land go fallow and just let it rest for a few years. It also coincided with very bad drought years, so it was a good moment to let the earth just recharge. And now we've had 2 years of plentiful water, so we're replanting. We are also in the second year of our organic certification program. We decided that we've been part of the Sonoma Sustainability for many years, and we love the whole, you know, everything that it encompasses. But we wanted to go a bit further and wanted to give consumers and ourselves, you know, I think one of the biggest challenges is you've got a different toolbox when you farm sustainably and organically. Mm-hmm. And getting comfortable with that new toolbox takes some years.
For sure.
And we were ready to take the next step, which was to get organic certification. We want to be very mindful. You know, I come from a very scientific background family, and we want facts. We want to be able to prove and show and, you know, walk the walk and talk the talk. So we're just doing it that way.
And so what will go into the replants? Because you grow predominantly Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, and Syrah. Are you adding something different? Are you changing kind of the percentage of things?
You know, that's been one of the, we've sat down and analyzed things, and, you know, it's clear that we have to think for the next 50, 60 years.
Yep.
So when you're doing that, clearly the same varietals that we planted back in 1989 may or may not apply. We are planting more Chardonnay. We love Chardonnay. We think it grows well. It's a wonderful varietal. Pinot Noir, also, we've added some selections of some clones that we didn't previously have. We wanted to expand on our clonal selection. And we're planting more Syrah. Mm. I really believe in Syrah as the dark horse of the Petaluma Gap. And I think it tolerates droughts, so it'll be a resilient varietal that will suit Sonoma County well and the Petaluma Gap.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Interesting. Okay.
And I love Syrah.
I know, me too.
We did pretty good Syrah around here.
Yeah. I know.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. That's great. Another, you know, just need for diversity of varieties of everything. What are some of your biggest challenges in the vineyard? I mean, you mentioned the wind, which defines Petaluma Gap. Wind can be problematic in the vineyard, but is it wind? Is it drought? I mean, now we're in different conditions, as you happen to mention. What is it?
I would say that, you know, definitely I love seeing the water. I'm very confident that we have water, but that will always be something in the back of our minds, is that the next drought will eventually come and we have to be prepared for it. It used to keep me, you know, I got my first gray hairs during the last drought, so that was that. But I also think these are really hard soils to farm. And, you know, the people they underestimate the variety of soils we have in Sonoma County. And one vineyard is not another vineyard. And what they hear, what worked well, in Russian River, may not apply to Petaluma Gap, and what applies to one section of our vineyard doesn't apply to another section. On the bottom portion of our property, we have heavy adobe clay soils, and that's just not fun to farm. Right. It requires very specific attention. They say there's two good days to farm the you know, clay soils. There's the good day and the better day, and everything else is bad. So it's really, it's a challenge to just get the tractors in on time, get them out. And so it's. I would say that the wind is not a challenge. The wind is a fact, and it's a constant fact. And I think we can believe, whether there's climate change or not, I think those winds are here to stay. They're actually beneficial during the cold months. They blow through, so we don't get as much frost pressure. Oh, yeah. They help clean the vineyards with the wind. They don't make for great afternoon, you know, dinners on al fresco.
Right.
But other than that, I think they're very constant. They provide a really beautiful quality to the fruit. They're great for ripening, very slow ripening, nice thick skins. So they're great from a winemaking perspective. I would say the drought is the single biggest issue, or the water availability. Mm-hmm. And the second one would be the, you know, farming your soil specifically.
Right.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, I just think it's still, we have to keep in mind or give ourselves a little bit of a break that we've been at this 100 plus years, and there's other wine regions that have been at this, you know, centuries of growing. And so there's so much learning. And these vines that you are replanting, I assume it's the first time you've replanted those vines. So this is your second round of really being able to implement some of the things you've learned from the first time you planted. I mean, we don't get to make those decisions very often. So you have to sort of really be mindful about what you're doing, and then how long of a term, like you said, if you're making decisions for the next 50 or 60 years. Not many businesses do that in such a profound way, I guess.
Well, and that sense of adaptation is just, you know, the consistent story of farming in general, but certainly California, it feels like there's such a spirit of adaptation that comes with sort of your science background, and you're probably looking at data, and there's better options for what you can plant and better rootstocks and clones, and you've learned so much over the time that you've been at it.
I think so. Yeah, the first time we planted with the orientation thinking we were in Burgundy. And we're not in Burgundy. Nope. And so there's a little more sun around here. So even those small, you know, what they knew 30 years ago and for we were trying to emulate so clearly, it's interesting to see that people are now emulating Sonoma County. We've changed it 30 years, but they seem like fast 30 years. Yeah. We've learned a lot in 30 years.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree.
Well, and we grow so many different, you know, varieties of grapes here, make so many different wines too, that helps, I think, broaden the perspective of what we can do well and in what soil types and what climate.
So. Yeah, got a lot to work with. So
I know, which is great for us as wine drinkers and lovers too.
I know. It's okay. Well, I think we have to take a quick break. When we come back, I think we're going to open the bubbles.
My favorite part of the show. Back on the good stuff. This is Carissa Cruz, and I'm here with my co-host Virginie Boone and our guest today, Anna Keller, Keller Estate. And when we took a break, right before the break, we were just chatting about sort of making these big decisions that you get to do kind of generationally. And we just wanted to take a moment, just recognize, Anna, that you recently lost your father, who was obviously the founder of this business, and just kind of wanted to give you a moment to hear about that legacy and kind of what you see ahead, and just honor that and honor him.
Thank you. He was 91 3/4. So he had a nice, great, long life. And we actually just bottled the 2023 rosé that every year we bottle in his honor.
Amazing.
So as a family, we decided to keep that legacy alive by always continuing to make that wine in his honor, which is something very special. And I really do miss having that sounding board, you know, that communication that I had. And we had a really great relationship. I was the youngest of four. So there might have been some good relationship there, just, you know, the little one in the family. Right. And but I think one of the things that's I do miss that sounding board. And now I feel like I'm talking in my head a lot.
Yeah.
And I have great, thankfully, I've got great siblings and my stepmom and everybody stepped up and given me a lot of time to really take a look at Keller Estate and take this moment to redefine and redirect what we want to do, where we want to take the brand and take the most important things of sustainability and family and paying a tribute to the land where we grow grapes for the next generation.
Yeah, I mean, I think the best tribute you can do is to honor the legacy of what was started by continuing it and creating the next generation of it. So, I mean, that's, I think, the gift of Sonoma County and our multi-generational farmers, for sure. So, well, we do have some wine, and maybe we could do a little toast to your dad.
He would be very in favor of a nice toast with a beautiful wine.
To toast to a life well lived is probably the best we can do. Oh,
there we go.
And if I did have my bubble bell, Virginie, I would be ringing the bell in his honor.
Yeah, we will just have some bubbles in the glass. Say it.
Yes, and we are pouring bubbles right now.
And just to tell you a little bit about this wine. So this is our 2019 Blanc de Blanc. So the reason why I chose this wine is because it's the last wine we produced from our original Chardonnay planting.
Yes.
So these are 30-year-old vines. And when we planted, we were told that if the wine didn't ripen, we could always make sparkling wine. So it seemed fitting that on the last vintage that this vineyard was farmed, we produced the sparkling wine just to share an honor with it.
Well,
so cheers.
Cheers, cheers, cheers.
Ting, ting.
Ting, 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 ting. And so maybe we should say a little bit about people, you know, who might want to come visit Keller Estate, see what you're doing there, see the vineyard, see the car collection.
Yeah, so we are open Wednesday through Sunday by appointment, same day reservations. You can give us a call. We also have a really nice, robust list of fun activities, talking about multi-generational. Yeah. We understand some people want to come in and enjoy a very geeky wine tasting. We can do that. If you want to have a little bit more fun, we have some events where we have music and wine.
Nice.
We have some culinary classes going on with tortillas and just paying some tribute to our Mexican heritage. So feel free to visit us on www.kellerestate.com and find how you can come and enjoy us.
And I'm just going to spell Keller, K-E-L-L-E-R, so kellerestate.com. And the bubbles are delicious.
The bubbles are
Blanc
delicious.
Blanc de Blanc are my favorite.
Thank you for bringing that. Yeah.
Absolute favorite. This is delicious.
And do you want to mention anything about the tortillas that you will be making later? It's later this summer, correct?
Well, we've got three more events, and so it's a culinary tour of Mexico, and this year we're featuring the Mighty Tortilla and how you make tortillas, why it's so special, and how the many ways you can use tortillas in Mexican cuisine. And we've crafted a really nice selection of food that, well, you know, that is great with wine pairing. We've had a lot of fun. I think people at home can enjoy tweaking recipes to make sure that they're much more fun with the wines that they're enjoying at the table.
I love that.
And will the Monarchs be there for a little bit longer, or are they...
My single Monarch? Yeah. I hope she brings a friend this year.
Monarch or one. Maybe she'll get a date.
Monarch was one.
Yeah, I mean, I think she's going to need a date if we want more of them.
I know.
Well, they know where to find you.
I was going to say, I'm gonna plant my milkweed and then help create the path. Because right. I, too, love butterflies. So that would be great.
Well, thank you so much, Anna Keller, for joining us today and telling us about Keller Estate and Petaluma Gap. And here again, a toast to your father.
Yes.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Yet another great show with a great guest. I love the Keller Estate story. I love everything that Anna, or I always, see, I defaulted to Anna. It's Anna.
Anna,
I
with one N,
she's
A-N-A,
done.
Yeah.
Everything she's done there and is doing there.
And the property is beautiful.
It is. It's stunning.
Stunning. I mean, a couple of years ago, I took my mom there for Mother's Day, and it was just so special. It's just a beautiful spot. So strongly recommend you go visit and learn how to make tortillas. I might have to do that.
Yeah.
My husband would be so happy if I learned how to really probably cook anything, frankly, but that's neither
here
nor there, but
start
that would
there.
Be super impressive, but definitely check them out. KellerEstate.com is their website if you want to make an appointment or check out all their fun events and cooking classes and everything they're doing, or follow them along on Instagram at Keller Estate. So, love, Anna.
I'm really hoping that I get some monarch butterflies.
I know. Wouldn't that be awesome? I love butterflies.
I wonder if I have to take pictures and like catalog
for
it
sure.
And if it becomes a whole obsession.
At least one for me and
Anna. Might
be like
Anna. The orchid thief, but I'll be like the monarch thief or something. There's a future novel.
You know, I was in Palm Springs recently and there's like a couple of dragonflies that hang out with me down there, which I just love. I love dragonflies.
They're so, luck in
yeah. So
some
I guess
way.
I'm very lucky in Palm Springs, so maybe the dragonflies could come visit me in Sonoma County and I could have year-round luck then.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear you didn't trap them and bring them up.
No, I did not, no. Like when I was a little kid and had the like lightning bugs, I definitely did that when I was a kid. That was fun.
Okay.
All right, we're on the good stuff. What's our wine for the week? What are you doing?
Well, a longtime favorite of mine has always been the Keller Estate Roti.
What?
I know.
You took my wine.
Sorry.
Like literally took my wine.
We're going to share it.
Or I love.
We'll get multiple bottles.
We'll get multiple bottles. So we're definitely hanging out Tuesday night then is what I'm hearing.
Yeah. I mean, I love that they make the roti, obviously an homage to the Rhone, Syrah, Viognier, co-ferment.
Yes.
It's delicious. They do such a nice job because of the cool climate. So the Syrah really has some nice spice and meaty notes to it. So,
yeah. And we can drink to the fact that they're planting more Syrah on their 18 acres.
That
so
is the best news
I think
I've
that's
heard
really exciting.
Today.
It is.
For sure. All right. Well, yet another great guest, great show. Thank
great
you,
bubbles.
Everyone. Thank you, everyone. Yeah, I know. Well, the bubbles also add to the fun. Thanks for joining us on The Good Stuff today. From Sonoma County to wherever you are, remember to drink the good stuff.
Cheers to that.